I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, push for peace. Israel and Hamas agree to a ceasefire deal with just days to go until the start of the Trump administration. We have the latest. Making her case. Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi faces questions from senators in the next round of confirmation hearings. We're on Capitol Hill. Age verification. The Supreme Court takes up a case with huge implications regarding online safety for minors. Plus, Holy See, an Italian naval ship is set to play a unique role in the 2025 Jubilee. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, after months of fighting and thousands killed tonight, it appears a ceasefire has been reached. Mediators announced that Israel and Hamas agreed to a deal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office says the final details were still being sorted out. Still, some people are celebrating. Celebration in the Gaza Strip following the ceasefire announcement. The deal is designed to pause the brutal war in Gaza and release dozens of hostages. In Tel Aviv, people, including the families of hostages, were gathering and awaiting news. It is expected the ceasefire would be implemented in the coming days. Prime Minister Netanyahu's office said that it hopes the deal's details of the deal will be finalized tonight. Owen Jensen joins us now from the White House with reaction.
Good evening. President Joe Biden originally did not have a speech about the Middle East on his schedule today, but then things changed very quickly. Reports began pouring in about the ceasefire. After weeks of painstaking negotiations in the Qatari capital, the deal, in phases, promises the release of dozens of hostages, Americans included, not all, who are being held by Hamas, the release of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners in Israel, and allows hundreds of thousands of people displaced in Gaza to return to what remains of their homes. It also would flood badly needed humanitarian aid into Gaza. Now, this afternoon, President Biden, who was already set to speak tonight from the Oval Office in a separate farewell speech, said this about the latest Mideast developments.
There was no other way for this war to end than with a hostage deal. And I'm deeply satisfied this day has come, finally come, for the sake of the people of Israel and the families waiting in agony, and for the sake of the innocent people in Gaza who suffered unimaginable devastation because of the war.
President-elect Donald Trump, whose incoming Mideast envoy had joined Biden's Mideast advisor for the talks in Doha, celebrated the ceasefire, posting on Truth Social. This epic ceasefire agreement could have only happened as a result of our historic victory in November, as a signal to the entire world that my administration would seek peace and negotiate deals to ensure the safety of all Americans and our allies. I am thrilled American and Israeli hostages will be returning home to be reunited with their families and loved ones. End quote. Now, this is the most deadly and destructive war Israel and Hamas have ever fought. Of course, it all started, ignited by that horrific massacre back on October 7th when Hamas invaded Israel, killing some 1,200 people. It appears, at least for now, because of this ceasefire, the fighting will stop. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And on Capitol Hill, reaction to the ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas was swift. Most lawmakers remain cautiously optimistic that the hostages will be released.
This is the Trump effect. I mean, he's coming into office in 5 days. There's a reason why people are probably coming to the table. He's promised to, get the hostages out one way or another, and they're probably paying attention to that.
A ceasefire is very good news for Israel, for America, for the Palestinian people, and particularly for the hostage families who have waited so long in agony.
All right, and for more, let's bring in Ambassador William Robach, Executive Vice President of the Arab Gulf States Institute. Mr. Ambassador, good to see you. First, your reaction to the ceasefire deal and the timing.
I think it's great news, Tracy. It's a long time coming. It's a horrific situation in Gaza. It's also been a very trying, difficult time for the hostage families. And I think it is a long time coming, as President Biden said, but it's a good, very, very good positive development. And the timing of it, I mean, it took a long time. It's 5 days before President Trump comes into office. I think he and his team can certainly share in the credit for the agreement, along with, of course, the Biden administration, key people who were involved in it, Bill Burns and the CIA, Secretary of State Blinken, and others who were heavily involved in the negotiations. So I think a lot of credit can be spread around.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. We know that President Biden's top Mideast advisor and President-elect Trump's Mideast envoy worked together on this deal. How significant is that?
I think it's very significant. I think it communicated to the Israelis, it communicated to the to Hamas and to the Palestinians and to the mediators involved that there was a joint effort. It was very important for the Biden team to get this done, but that it was also a huge priority for the incoming Trump team and a new administration, which is going to be here for 4 years. So I think they all paid attention to that, and I think it helped maybe get this thing over the finish line.
Yeah, and that said, though, President Biden, you know, he addressed the nation this afternoon and said this is the same deal that he proposed last spring. So what do you think changed, and why did they come to this agreement now?
It's a good question, Tracy. I think the outlines of the deal that is now agreed to, those outlines are very similar to what was agreed to previously. I think maybe the two, each side in the past found reasons to delay or not to make the final push, the final concessions that were needed to reach an agreement. And so the fighting just went on far too long. And of course, the Palestinian people were the ones caught in the middle in Gaza suffering. Tens of thousands were killed, and it's a catastrophic humanitarian situation. And on the Israeli side, the Israeli families have been waiting for many, many months to get their loved ones back and reach some closure. So it's been a difficult situation all around.
Yeah, and before I let you go, you know, a lot of people are drawing parallels here between this moment and the Iranian hostage crisis when the hostages released, you know, right as Ronald Reagan was about to take over the presidency from President Jimmy Carter. I want to get your thoughts on that, Mr. Ambassador. And do you think that's a fair comparison?
It's an interesting analogy or an interesting comparison. I don't know. I don't. It depends on how what the optics are in their release, what the timing is. It's coming right down to the wire. I suppose it could be, if somebody wanted to portray it that way, they could. For right now, President Biden is taking significant credit for the deal, and the deal, unlike the Iranian hostage deal, as I understand it, this deal was reached before the president left office. So he's in a better position, I think, to take significant credit than President Carter was with the Iranian hostage situation.
Ambassador Roebuck, thank you so much for weighing in. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Tracy.
On several more cabinet nominees, the president-elect Donald Trump had their confirmation hearings today, including his pick to be the 87th United States Attorney General. Pam Bondi faced a firestorm of questions from members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with the latest on that.
Good evening, Tracy. Committee Democrats fired question after question to the former Florida Attorney General about her loyalty to President-elect Donald Trump. She was involved in Trump's efforts to try to overturn the 2020 election results. During her hearing, Bondi told lawmakers that she accepts the results that made Joe Biden president and adds that she will uphold the Constitution and her top priority for the Department of Justice to return the trust of the American people.
My overriding objective will be to return the Department of Justice to its core mission of keeping Americans safe and vigorously prosecuting criminals. And that includes getting back to basics, gangs, drugs, terrorists, cartels, our border, and our foreign adversaries.
The lead Democratic Senator Dick Durbin pressed the nominee on whether she would weaponize the DOJ against Trump opponents.
I will not politicize that office. I will not target people simply because of their political affiliation. Justice will be administered even-handedly throughout this country. Senator, we've got to bring this country back together. We've got to move forward, or we're going to lose our country.
The questions then turn to the events of January 6th.
Do you believe that those who've been convicted of the January 6th riot, violent assaults on our police officers, should be pardoned?
The pardons, of course, fall under the president. But if asked to look at those cases, I will look at each case and advise on a case-by-case basis, just as I did my entire career as a prosecutor.
Republicans were quick to come to her defense and then focused on the weaponization of the DOJ under the Biden administration, including the targeting of Catholics.
We have seen over the last 4 years a Department of Justice that systematically targeted the political opponents of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and that systematically protected his friends and allies.
Senator Amy Klobuchar questioned Bondi about access to abortion clinics and if she will continue to defend the FACE Act.
Senator, the FACE Act not only protects abortion clinics, but it also protects pregnancy centers and people going for counseling. The law should be applied even-handedly. Yes, Senator.
The Senate Judiciary Committee will hold a second day of hearings on Bondi's nomination tomorrow with outside witnesses testifying. Neither committee or a full Senate confirmation vote have been scheduled just yet. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
In addition to Pam Bondi, Secretary of State nominee Marco Rubio made the case for his confirmation before his former Senate colleagues.
President Trump returns to office with an unmistakable mandate from the voters. They want a strong America engaged in the world, but guided by a clear objective to promote peace abroad and security and prosperity here at home.
Rubio promises to forge a new path by placing American interests above all else. He adds that China is America's biggest threat. Rubio is expected to easily win confirmation. All right, now to the wildfires in California. Millions of people are on edge amid a forecast that includes high winds and dry conditions. Officials are asking everyone to remain vigilant.
As we enter into the third day of this additional wind event, I urge everyone to stay alert. The combination of low humidity and strong winds has further dried out the brush, increasing the risk of fire. The danger has not yet passed, so please, please prioritize your safety.
The blazes have killed at least 25 people and destroyed thousands of homes in anticipation of the high winds today. Firefighters in unimpacted areas took precaution, including spraying billboards and land with water. And joining us now is Dr. Carol Lieberman, a psychiatrist and Malibu resident. Dr. Lieberman, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've lived in the area for such a long time. Talk to us about what you have personally experienced in these wildfires.
Well, when the wildfires began on Tuesday, last Tuesday, in the evening, I decided the best thing to do would be to evacuate. We hadn't gotten a mandatory evacuation yet, but since I had experience from the 2018 Woolsey fire, I didn't want to wait till the last minute. So we evacuated. So I am in a hotel in Ventura, about 100 miles away, 75 miles away, with my daughter and two cats and a dog.
How can people navigate this? I mean, you've gone through a lot yourself. You're a psychiatrist. Part of your job is to help other people through these feelings. How can people deal with this type of loss? I mean, what advice would you give folks? Because I'm sure there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, a lot of grief right now.
The most important thing at the very beginning now is to take care of yourself physically and to make sure that you're eating, that you're getting enough sleep. I know this is easier said than done, but that's the, to start, that's the most important part. And then psychologically, to have social supports, whether it's your neighbors, where you can talk to each other about it, what happened, and share stories and so on, or friends from far away, but just having social support, talking. Also, if you're able to, it really helps to volunteer. There are some centers, where they're giving away clothes and food and things like that. If you are able to, that is really something that is very good to help you feel better, as well as the other people who you're volunteering for.
Yeah. And this isn't something, I mean, this is going to be long term as well, because there's going to be rebuilding. Do you have any other tips for folks, maybe how to navigate this long term?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because I hadn't realized until yesterday that a whole week had gone by that I had evaporated. Yes, it feels like I evaporated, evacuated. And I was saying something yesterday, and I was saying something about last Tuesday, and then I realized that's a week. Time just escapes you, you know. But on long term, you know, part of the problem is that you're supposed to be signing up for FEMA and signing up for this and that and doing things, you know, to take care of yourself. I mean, logistical kinds of things. And it's hard when you're in a state of shock or when the next stage is denial. You know, it's really hard to function. So it's great if you are with someone, you know, someone in your family or who can help you to sort of sort these things out. Long term, just take it slow. You know, look, I'm a great example of that. 6 years. And, you know, I chose in part to do that because I didn't want all the work that I was doing to fall apart. So I chose to sort of prioritize certain things. And people should do that too. That don't feel, I mean, of course, you want to get a roof over your head and all that, even a temporary roof. But so don't feel the pressure of having to get your house built back together or having your life back together in a week.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, Dr. Lieberman, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for talking to us. And again, we are so sorry for everything that you're going through and everyone in California, and we're praying for you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, the deadly wildfires are also forcing an annual pro-life event in Los Angeles to change its plans. One Life LA will now be held entirely at Our Lady of the Angels Cathedral, and there will no longer be a walking portion to the event. Officials say that is in order to alleviate the need for any law enforcement and safety personnel, which would have been required. The annual gathering draws tens of thousands to downtown LA to celebrate the beauty and dignity of every human life. South Korea's impeached president is sent to a detention center following his short-lived declaration of martial law last month. Yoon Suk-yeol says the rule of law in his country has collapsed. He faces a potential long prison term over rebellion charges. And we have a lot more so to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a final farewell. For the last time, President Biden addresses the nation from the Oval Office, a preview of the speech. And protesters gather outside the Supreme Court, hoping their voices are heard inside their fight to protect children online. That's ahead. President Joe Biden plans to deliver his farewell address to the nation tonight. Ahead of the speech, he penned an open letter saying that it has been the privilege of his life to serve America for over 50 years. The Biden administration also included a long list of what it says it accomplished, including on abortion. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports for us once again.
Very soon tonight, from the Oval Office, President Joe Biden, his one and only term almost done, will speak to Americans. Ahead of his comments, his press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, telling reporters,
What he wants to do, obviously, is also be positive, talk about what we have been able to do. This is a president that speaks about possibilities and how he sees this country moving forward.
The Biden administration, which from day one has been pushing for and supporting abortion, is proud of its record. Writing today, it took unprecedented executive action to protect access to reproductive health care after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. That includes protecting what it calls safe and legal medication abortion. But National Right to Life says there's nothing safe about it.
It's particularly painful and dangerous for women. And the way the Biden administration is tossing them around like aspirin, is harmful for our society. It's harmful for women. It's deadly for babies.
The Biden administration also saying it defended what it calls access to emergency abortion care and the right to travel to other states for abortion.
President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris did a lot of damage to the pro-life movement, but mostly to mothers and unborn babies and families that were affected.
Carol Tobias says most of what the Biden administration did was through executive action, and all of that can be reversed. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, officials in New Jersey say that ahead of the president-elect's return to the office, they are stockpiling abortion pills. Democrat Governor Phil Murphy says that he will build up the supply of mifepristone so that, quote, every woman can access this crucial form of reproductive care. Well, today, the Supreme Court heard arguments regarding age verification for online pornography sites. Protesters gathered outside while justices heard oral arguments inside regarding HB 1181. The Texas law requires pornographic websites to verify the age of users before providing access. The law was met with opposition by the pornography industry, which argues that it violates free speech. But supporters say it is a matter of child safety.
In my policy work, I've heard too many stories and seen the evidence firsthand that it is a nearly impossible fight for parents to keep their children safe from porn online.
At this inflection point where we can literally change the course of the future, and I think, you know, this is what makes the porn regime really impenetrable, is this lack of accountability.
All right, here to talk more about the case is Annie Chestnut Tudor, a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. Annie, welcome. Thanks for joining us. So first off, your big takeaways from today's oral arguments.
I think it went well. What we heard from the court was a reaffirmation that the government has a compelling interest to protect kids from obscene content, that is online pornography. And many of the justices acknowledged that filtering and blocking software has largely failed, and that many kids are able to get around it and still access this content. And I think we also heard an acknowledgement that there's been great advancements in age verification technology, and there are many methods out there that are reasonable, commercially available, secure, and maintain user privacy. And that's why Texas, along with 18 other states, have decided that age verification is the best solution to keep kids off of pornography websites.
Yeah, and the justices, though, they were, you know, rather divided, though, on whether to uphold the lower court's ruling. Catholic Justice Amy Coney Barrett, she's a mother of teenagers, and she is one of those who talked about the effectiveness of content filtering software. She said children can access this online porn through things like gaming systems, so it's really difficult to keep up with, while Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said advances in technology, that basically cuts both ways. Talk to us about all of that.
Yeah, so the underlying question, which is really a technical one that they had to answer today, is about what level of scrutiny does the court have to apply regarding the First Amendment? What is it, rational basis? Just does a government have? Is it related to the government interest or a stricter scrutiny regarding the using the least restrictive means? And unclear where exactly they will end up on it. Some people have speculated that there could be somewhere in the middle, because in 2004, when they last ruled on this, they used the strict scrutiny, least restrictive means, which they determined at that time was blocking and filtering technology, and they determined that age verification didn't exist. But we've seen that change with smartphones. We've seen the access, the online proliferation of pornography, and we've seen that blocking and filtering doesn't really work. And we've seen that we have age verification methods. There are several options out there.
And we have about 20 seconds left. So really quickly, any sense on how the justices may rule and what happens next?
Yeah, well, I think there'll be some time before we hear a decision from them. It could be near the end of their term, which is in June. And by today, I'm feeling hopeful. I think there was great acknowledgement that from the justices that the status quo isn't working and that states have a right to do something about it. So I'm optimistic about this case.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Annie, thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, enough is enough. What the Holy Father says that we should never tolerate. Plus, from the high seas to the high heavens, the special mission this ship will have during the Jubilee year and its link to America. Sisters in Nigeria are now free following a week-long captivity. The members of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, Mother of Christ, were returned unconditionally and are in good health. Good news there. Well, Pope Francis urges the faithful to never tolerate the abuse of children.
E questo si fa. Sapete bene. Questo si fa.
At the Weekly Talk, the Holy Father decried the abuse and exploitation of children worldwide. He adds that it is not simply a crime, but a gross violation of God's commandments. A historic Italian naval ship named for the 15th century explorer who coined the name America has been given a unique role in the 2025 Jubilee year. The Amerigo Vespucci travels the world as a cultural hallmark for Italy. This year, it will do so as an official Jubilee year church on board. Military members can obtain the benefits from the Jubilee indulgence. The ship's chaplain says it is a sign that the church is always close to those who serve in the military. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.